Welcome to episode 217 of Grid Talk. Today we're here to review the 2022 French Grand Prix. My name is Ruby Price, and joining me we have sports writer Owain Medford.
Hello.
Tom Downey from Everything F1.
Hello.
And Aaron Harper from Five Red Lights.
Howdy.
First, if you enjoy this podcast, we'd love it if you could take five to leave us a five-star rating on Spotify or a five-star review on Apple Podcasts. If you do, you'll automatically go into our monthly draw to win the Grid Talk t-shirt from our champion range of merch. And if you're one of the 72% of people who aren't yet subscribed to the channel, please consider helping us out with a like and a subscribe. So it will take some Ferrari level of bad luck for this championship to swing away from Max Verstappen after he took a dominant win in Paul Ricard when his rival Leclerc crashed out. Aaron, we assumed it would be a two-stop when Max pitted early, but he made the one-stop work and is now 63 points ahead of Charles. How will he be feeling after those 53 laps?
Well, I don't think it would have been a two-stop had Leclerc not crashed. Red Bull had gone for the undercut, so there's a strong chance that they would have executed the two-stop, but once Leclerc was out of the way, they were never going to be challenged by Mercedes. They just didn't have the straight-line performance. So he just managed his tyres to the end. It became a very straightforward race in the end for Max Verstappen, and he'll be very, very happy about it. It is a shame that we are seeing... I'm not going to say... Verstappen handed the title, because obviously he's having to do the hard work. He's won some races through pure skill and speed, but it could certainly be being made harder for him. And that's not to say that things can't change, because you know we've seen how quickly things can change in Formula One over the years. And as Murray Walker always said, anything can happen in Formula One, and it usually does. So you know, don't count your chickens just yet if you're a Red Bull fan. 63 points is a big lead. It's a comfortable lead. And from here, I would expect him to go and seal the deal for a second consecutive world championship. But there's still a long way to go in this championship. 10 rounds to go. And we head to Hungary next week where, you know, bowling ball Bottas turned up and he'll be starting even further back next week. So there's even more people for him to take out. Red Bull have just got to be, as they were today, very astute in their strategy, deliver a good car, and Max just has to do the rest. And that's what he did today. He didn't do any more than he needed to. So a job well done.
It certainly was a job well done by Max Verstappen today. All he really had to do, as you said, was just finish the race. And that 25 points was absolutely his, because Owain, as Aaron mentioned, the Mercedes just didn't quite have the straight line speed to be keeping up with Max or Charles whilst he was still in P1 today. But Lewis Hamilton finishing P2 in a Mercedes 2-3, the first double podium for the team of the season. After a lightning start, that was a very good job from Lewis Hamilton today.
Yeah, excellent drive. And it's one of those things, it's the thing that, I don't know. I the way I like to look at it, I think that sort of Mercedes is almost the anti-Ferrari in that they seem uniquely able to get the best out of a bad situation in comparison to Ferrari, who seem to get the worst out of a good situation. And they're not throwing it in the wall. And the team, you know, I guess it's easy to chase, but they look uniquely able to just keep moving forward, keep moving in the right direction. And they don't seem to be suffering many setbacks. I think that's, you know, evident, and it's the reason that we see them in the 2-3 with Lewis Hamilton not especially far off, given the pace of the car. Max Verstappen, obviously, there was a safety car in between, but you know, it looks like Mercedes are going strength to strength, and as you say, Lewis Hamilton did an excellent drive, particularly to keep Perez behind, I would say, because I thought once Perez had DRS in the opening stages of the race, I thought that was over. It wasn't. And I think that's another big part of why the Mercedes were able to get a second place today.
Yeah, throughout the weekend, the Mercedes have had about 17, 18 kph less than the Red Bulls, when the Red Bull, when both teams have had DRS. So logically, when one of those cars has got DRS and is behind, you should be seeing a swap over there, but we didn't see that. And Tom, what we did see was some really smart thinking from George Russell on the virtual safety car restart to just jump ahead of Sergio Perez, who seemed to have been caught napping.
Yeah, I think Perez was either having a siesta or was drinking tequila out of his onboard drink system, because he was just, yeah, he was a, but Russell was sort of playing cat and mouse with him behind. He was sort of going, hur-ay. And then Perez went, oh, and then Russell went, woohoo, and then went past him, basically. You know, that's not exactly a technical analysis, but that's just one man's analysis. But yeah, it was very, very smart thinking. And yeah, you know, Russell knew that Perez was struggling on those tyres, which is feels like an odd thing to say for Perez, because obviously, you know, beforehand, you know, he's certainly been the tyre whisperer. He sort of has his wicked way with them, but maybe he's just not getting on as well with the 2022 tyres, because obviously they're very different to what we've had before. Obviously they're bigger wheels, you know, different. You know, they're very different, all the rest of it. So, you know, maybe that's an element of it. I don't know. Just speculating. But yeah, Russell did a good number on Perez coming out the end of the VSC. Definitely caught Perez napping. And I think Russell had the bit between his teeth, and he was losing his cool at one point, which I think we all saw. With that move going into I don't know if you call it a chicane or not, but the sequence of turns on the Michelin Strait. It was a very, very ambitious move from Russell. We've seen him do it before, and you know, we've seen Max obviously do that kind of thing before. And I think if he wouldn't have clipped the curb, I think it'd have made the corner safely and he'd have been ahead on merit. But he did ever so. I didn't realize it at the time, but he did ever so slightly clip that inside curb, like Ocon did. And it's only because Perez took avoiding action that I think we didn't see potentially coming together there. I get Russell's point that he felt he was entitled to the corner, and a racer's always going to say that, aren't they? But his rear wing was sort of like alongside Russell's. Sorry, his front wing was alongside Russell. My God alive. Russell's front wing was alongside Perez's rear wheel. There we go. It only took three goes. There's one for the Clips channel. But it was ambitious at best. And you know, George Saint Perez running that road, I disagree with that. Perez was going to keep it on track, and then there was no track for him to keep it on because George clipped the curb. And then he was getting a bit hot under the collar. Well, very hot under the collar, actually, because we heard his engineer telling him to, you know, just trying to tell him to keep his head calm. Then obviously Toto twice came on the radio and was like, you know, come on, we'll have him. Then I think obviously when the VSC came around, Russell was like, right, come on, son, you're having it. And then pulled that master stroke, or sort of just called Perez's bluff. I suppose is the easiest way to put it. And yeah, put it back on the podium.
Yeah, absolutely. And as was mentioned, Aaron, Sergio Perez got caught napping. Should Sergio Perez really have been in P3 at the end of this race today?
I'd say he should have been in P2, because he has shown this year that he's able to extract the performance from the car. But he just had a really scruffy weekend. He was a little bit at sea on Friday with his setup work, off the pace. He got it together in qualifying, but if the Mercedes was able to deliver a lap instantly, getting the tyres up to temperature, then it's likely that they could have been ahead of him, or at least one of them would have been. And in the race, he fell off in terms of tyre wear and lap time, which was strange to see from Checo. There is a rumour that the car has been developed away from Checo's liking. But that's neither here nor there, because you've got to drive what you have. And recently, he's been driving very well. But since the Monaco win, his form seems to have dropped off a bit, which is a shame. and it certainly curtailed any hopes he had of winning the world championship. As for today, he ended up where he deserved to be, which was off the podium. And without Ferrari being Ferrari, he would probably have ended up in sixth. And then you're looking at a situation where we go, well, hang on, Verstappen's won the race and Perez is way down in sixth. Have we got the best possible driver combination? So there's definitely work to be done for Sergio over the next week heading into Budapest and then the summer break. And he'll be very disappointed with today. And I'm a bit disappointed with his performance as well. And I have to agree with what Owen said. I expected to see Perez breeze past the Mercedes of Hamilton once he'd lost the position. But for a car with like 18 kilometers an hour of extra straight line speed to have lost the position at the start and never, ever regained it, that's worrying. And that is going to be of real concern to Christian Horner. Because if Ferrari get their act together and start winning races and putting 1-2s on the board, a Sergio Perez that's not delivering is going to cost Red Bull the Constructors' Championship, even though they currently hold an 82-point advantage, which might seem ridiculous, but if you're finishing first or second with Max and then fifth, sixth, seventh with Checo, you're going to bleed points very quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. And with the Mercedes as well, revitalized and taking these P3s, P2s even, you know, that's more points that you're not getting yourself. And ultimately, it's points that, you know, could cost you a title. Owen, Carlos Sainz in Ferrari. Some choice words would probably be made to describe Ferrari's strategy today or for the last couple of seasons, really. But was it also unreasonable to expect Carlos Sainz to have done such a stint on the medium tyres when most people could only really make them last about 18 laps?
I don't know with Ferrari. To me, they gave up a position. I don't know what to say about. I mean, they seem incompetent, inept. Just come like unwilling to look out the window of what's happening. You know, were they even in the same race? Sort of thing. Like, I don't get the second pit stop. You know, I think he could have done. You know, the fuel blow would have burnt off, and I think even going past, I fully would have seen him getting past, getting another 5 seconds. You know, it seemed to be what was happening. You know, the pace was in the car to do it. And you know, I totally get listening to your driver on that, but it seemed ridiculous to make a call to do that stop. You know, so close to the end of the race and give him basically 3.5-4 seconds per lap to be making up to get anywhere close to where he was. I can't even level the blame at Sainz, because Sainz did a really good job, to be honest, in my opinion. You know, with what he had to do, he drove a great race. He was just given, you know, just a ridiculous task. I can't get my head around it. You've got to make the best of a bad situation, at least with one car. And I know, obviously, starting from the back, it's not good, your prospects. But, you know, they took a bad race and made it even worse. And that's, you know, cardinal sin, in my opinion. So I think Ferrari really jumped the shark again. And I don't see that getting better at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. Just, you have to hand it to Carlos that he was able to get from P19 to what should have been a net P3, And as well, when you look at the results, that 5 second stop that he had to make because of the unsafe release, he's not 5 seconds off Russell at the end. So why they decided to pit him at the time that they did was, I just think, so ill thought out. But anyway, Tom, Fernando Alonso, P6. You would argue a great result for the Alpine team.
Oh, yeah. And you know, I said yesterday that Alonso will do something with a little bit of flair. And it's like his opening lap was exactly that. The way he made moves at the start, you know, had a super launch. Both he and Hamilton, absolutely outstanding launches today. You know, it was proper chef's kiss moment. And then Alonso just did what he did. And when he came over the team radio towards the end, when his engineer said to him, he said, "Oh, by the way, Norris is behind." And Alonso is basically saying, "Yeah, no bother. Just let him catch up and burn up his tires." He did exactly that, which meant Ocon could catch up. And once again, did you see the gap? Did you see the gap between Alonso and who was in front of him? Because it was Sainz and Perez and Russell and that group. It was about 20 something seconds in the end, and there was you know Alonso was just doing his best little Miss DRS train impression, and he did exactly that. And he backed up the McLarens, and it was a bit of a vintage Fernando Alonso performance. You know, bit of flair, bit of sass. A lightning start. You know, brought home good points in a car which isn't the best on the field. How many times have we seen him do that? So it was a good result for him, and it's a good result for Alpine as well, because obviously they were tied with McLaren, but they now move ahead of McLaren into they're into fourth now in the constructors Alpine, I believe. Good day for Alonso. I had a feeling he'd do something, you know, just a little bit special at his team's home race. Because I know Alpine obviously based in Enstone, but they are French backed, and you know, obviously French team, French race, you know, Team Enstone, you know, / Renault / Alpine / whoever else they've been over the years, they absolutely adore Alonso, and he loves them. There's a reason he's been there 3 times. He was just putting in moves today, it was just good to see.
Yeah, absolutely. Aaron, I would argue it was a bit of an anonymous race for Lando Norris. Obviously, you know, did a good job yesterday to put his car between the two Mercedes in qualifying. But, you know, from the start of the race and, you know, being jumped by Fernando, I believe he was jumped by Ocon, but then the Ocon and Tsunoda thing put him further back again. But it was a nothing race for Lando Norris.
It was anonymous rather than a nothing race. He just did the job that he needed to do. Nico Rosberg was saying on Sky F1 ahead of the race that he thinks Lando is a future champion. And I have to agree with him. He's driving with the maturity to become a title contender. Obviously, we're seeing, like with Charles Leclerc, how drivers can fare under the real pressure of a world championship battle. Lando's just doing an excellent job. When the car isn't coming alive, he just bags solid points. Like yesterday, he produced a stunning lap to split the two Mercedes. So you can't say fairer than that in terms of qualifying pace. And then once the Alpine was in front, you're probably not going to overtake it if you're in a McLaren, because one, the Alpine is an absolute bullet in a straight line, because they run the skinniest wings you will ever see. They're basically in the 50s with the lack of wings. And the McLaren, by contrast, lacks a little bit of straight line speed. It's a little bit draggy, it's a little bit heavy, it's a little bit like the Mercedes in that sense. And yet, Lando was still able to drag 7th place out of it. And he kept it on the road. We saw other drivers getting caught up in accidents and spinning off, and just general reliability. McLaren, nice and tidy, 7 points, knowledge of the updates, looked a lot more positive. So on a track where there'll be a bit more competitive, perhaps a little bit quicker than Alpine, they'll fancy their chances. But today was just about making sure they lost as few points as possible to Alpine. And I think Lando did just that.
Yeah, absolutely. Owen, Esteban Ocon, P8 in the Alpine, obviously had that coming together, which he received a 5-second penalty for with Yuki Tsunoda on the first lap. Do you agree that it was Ocon's fault? And ultimately, do you think that, you know, he could have finished further up without that penalty?
Yeah, so it's a 5-second penalty, and he's, and you know, and he's under 5 seconds away from Norris. So, you know, they were at least had a battle, assuming everything else being equal. I've had a look at the results, and to be honest, the only people that, like, you know, he started 10th and finished in 8th. The only people that he overtook, not the only people he overtook, but the two places he's made there are owing to him punting off Tsunoda. So I guess that worked out for him. And obviously Charles Leclerc. So, you know, I don't see that as a, you know, it's an average race. It's, you know, to my eye, at least, that's finishing where you've started. I mean, he's profited off, you know, in my opinion, a not particularly well punished mistake, and, you know, really understated into Tsunoda, and obviously that took Tsunoda out of the race, both sort of metaphorically initially, and then and obviously literally by the end when they retired the car. So it's a bit of a nothing race, but, you know, at least he would have had a chance, I guess, to have a bit of a fight with Norris, and maybe would have been able to do some extra stuff on the strategy or help be a pincer for Alonso. But beyond that, you know, it's a solid performance. Obviously, you know, he's made the mistake and he's done his time for it, as it were. But, you know, beyond that, it's not, you know, I don't think there's too much to say about it to be past that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Tom, Daniel Ricciardo is a driver under a lot of pressure from the media, from fans, from pretty much everyone, really, and probably including himself. But he's managed to, you know, finish home in P9, which I think is about where he started. But considering that Daniel Ricciardo really just needs to, you know, be bagging some of these kind of points, I think it's a job well done for him.
Is it though? Because if he started P9, but we had we had Leclerc obviously conk out in front of him. So if he had finished in net P8, then you know that would have been sort of on course. But no, you got passed by Ocon, you know, towards the latter stages of the race. So that was his main battle that race. He did have a decent start, and he was looking. I did notice he was having a little sniff at Norris at the start. As they sort of come around that back loop that takes you back onto the main straight. I can't remember what turn it is, sorry. I think it's turn 6. I could be completely wrong. So I'm not even going to attempt to guess what number turn it is. Yes, you know, he showed in this sort of like decent, you know, perhaps a bit of promise or whatever, but again, it just fell into sort of nothingness quite quickly. Yeah, I agree, Ruby. No one knows what turns they really are. It gives me a migraine, that track, honestly. I'm trying really hard not to go over all ground with Danny because, you know, we've gone over it enough times and it's not going to do it. I doubt he listens to this anyway. You never know. And he's obviously made his intentions very clear. I just want him to have a couple of weekends where he can just sort of like, even if it's nothing unspectacular, you know, if you just say like qualifies P8, finishes P6, you know, qualifies P9, finishes P7. This weekend could have been a good weekend for that. You know, he qualified P11, but obviously moved up to P9 with Sainz and K-Mag with their benching penalties. So started on the road P9. But you know, on merit, he still didn't make it into Q3 when his teammate put it P5. So Yeah, I don't know. It's a tricky one. I get with qualifying that obviously the track ramps up all the rest of it, and you know, so drivers get more and more at one, all that kind of thing. But he's just not looking as settled in that car. You know, today, like I said, it was a good opportunity for him to get some good points on the board. Okay, he got what 2 points for ninth place. You'd argue, given a quarter of the field didn't finish, as you put it in the live chat, you'd have expected, you know, I'd have expected more from him.
Yeah, I mean, that is a good counter argument to what I started with. Aaron, a driver who did have an anonymous race until literally the last corner after a little bit of a tussle with his teammate, it seems. Lance Stroll rounding off the points positions for Aston Martin. It's a point. And I think Lance is very much in need of those.
Yeah, it's a good point for him and for Aston Martin. I think there was a little bit of sorting out to do at the end of the race, considering it was teammate versus teammate into the final corner. Quiet race from Stroll. We didn't see them a whole lot. We saw them together on the final lap. That was about it. So I can't really talk too much about Lance's race. Per se, I'm assuming he probably stopped under the safety car and then just ran to the end. He was in 10th for a long time. So he's been fairly consistent in that respect. And whether that's him or the car or a combination of the layout allowing him to stay in front, but it's a job well done. He's managed to get himself 10th place, having started something like 16th or 17th. So that's a good, solid effort and a well-managed race. He got a little bit shirty with his engineer over the radio, but that's Lance. And, you know, if I had someone in my ear telling me about different things that didn't really matter, and I'm trying to drive at 200 miles an hour, I think I'd be a bit shirty with people too. But nevertheless, it's another 10th place. He likes to finish 10th in 2022, doesn't he, Lance? And another point doesn't really help Aston Martin in the grand scheme of things, because they only gain 1 point on AlphaTauri ahead of them. But I suppose it's a single point. It's one more than Williams. But that's probably a slightly damning indictment on where Aston Martin's performance level is at the moment.
Yeah, it certainly is a bit of a damning one. And Wayne, the only real thing we saw from Vettel, other than the little coming together with Lance in the final corner, he made a good overtake on Albon to get into, I think it was P11 where he's actually finished up. So there is at least something that Sebastian Vettel still got some life with.
Yeah, it's a good racing driver. I don't think that's ever been up for debate. Obviously, he's had, you know, periods of time where he's not been as good, up to his best, which we know is astoundingly high. I must have missed that overtake, to be honest with you. But all I remember is them fighting that hard right at the end. I don't know why they were fighting that hard, the two Astons. I thought that was very high risk for a team that, again, is 8 points off their closest rival in the constructors, and I really don't see why they need to be fighting that hard just to stay on terms. I don't see the point. But they decided to. They got really close in the last quarter. That's it's a decent enough race for Vettel, and I think for both Astons, to be honest. I think I'm glad that they're actually both in. You know, obviously the retirements notwithstanding, the fact that they're actually fairly close to being in the top 10 is a positive. Whether that's on true performance, I think remains to be seen. I'd like to see that a bit more consistently, but beyond that, yeah, that's Vettel for you.
That is certainly this brand of Vettel we've certainly got. And Tom, I'm going to go to you because we're having some issues with Aaron. Pierre Gasly, P12, not really the best home race for him, but the not great home race kind of started yesterday with his qualifying performance, didn't it?
Yeah, I thought it was going to be, you know, I thought we were going to be on to perhaps a bit of a better weekend for Gasly. And he was looking good in pre-practice on Friday, but pre-practice means nothing all. But at the end of the day, you know, if you can't put it, if you can't put it in the qualifying lap, then yeah, you know, you're not going to get much. And unfortunately, that's exactly what happened. He went out in Q1, didn't have a great race, and you know, finished outside the points again. Just not a good race weekend for him. Like I said last week, or maybe the week before now, I said, Gasly just needs a summer break. We've got one race left next week. And he just, Gasly just needs some time off. He needs some time away from racing. And like I said before, maybe some time away from social media, because he'll do his mind the world good. I did it, and it was brilliant. He just needs a mental reset. And I think he's getting himself a bit worked up over where's he going to go in F1, because there aren't really any seats around at the minute. The Red Bull door's been shut in his face, and he needs to get out of the Red Bull program full stop. Because if he doesn't, you know, his time's going to expire in F1. He's been in it full time since 2018, let's not forget. He made his debut midway through 2017. So, you know, it's not like he's a relative newbie. And, you know, that's an awfully long time to be in a quote-unquote junior seat, especially given he's got another season coming up. You know, so I don't know. He didn't do himself that many favours this weekend. He needs to, he just needs to have some good weekends like he had, you know, like we saw so many of last year and the year before, and even in the last half of 2019, actually, was dropped by Red Bull. So, you know, we need the old Gasly back. Maybe he needs more time to gel with the new cars, and you know, the AlphaTauri doesn't look as competitive, but also, Tsunoda still having, still put it in Q3 and would have probably had a decent race had Ocon not punted him off the track at the start. So, it can't all be blamed on the car. You know, Gasly's got to take some accountability for it. That's why I said I think he just needs a bit of a reset.
Yeah, I do think, you know, some of it does obviously, like you say, come down to the fact that the AlphaTauri for this year is just not the car that it was last season. But then none of them are. Whereas, you know, obviously last season, we'd basically had the same cars for 2 years because of the situation, as, you know, some organizations have taken to calling it. But Aaron, Alex Albon, another anonymous race for him. The upgraded Williams just seems to be settled around that, you know, P11 to P15 margin for at least one of their drivers.
Yeah, I think this podcast for me is a bit more eventful than Alex Albon's race, because the washing line has just been blown over, which is why I had to disappear for a moment. Aside from the washing being blown over, Albon's race was exciting only when Carlos Sainz was pulled out in front of him and he had to jam on the brakes in the pit lane. Apart from that, he was never really going to trouble the points. And you say Williams are sort of nestled in that midfield area, and that's improvement from where they were. Shows that the car is being developed in the right direction. And the midfield, as we know, is competitive. And if McLaren and Alpine are locking out the remaining points positions, it only leaves one or two spots up for grabs. And if Lance Stroll pulls a worldie, then there's nothing left. So P13 for Alex Albon today, I think, is a solid drive. He doesn't need to, well, I say he doesn't need to be spectacular and flashy, but he just needs to be effective in that car, which is what he's doing, because everyone's looking at him and going, oh, wow, yeah, he really is a good driver. And he's continuing to show it. Maybe he's one of those drivers who isn't quite good enough for one of the top teams, but he will excel in a midfield team, possibly like Pierre Gasly. So for Alex, it's just about you know, being effective, leading that team, being a good racing driver. And he's doing exactly that. He's having a really good season. He scored a few points. Everyone's looking at him favorably again. There's a more positive vibe around him. So I think all of the things that he would have wanted to accomplish coming into the season, he's ticked all the boxes. And, you know, a P13 in a Williams, that's not to be discredited. It's a solid effort. You know, it's a lot of effort for no reward, but there will be more clever people than us diving into the data and looking at just how effective his performance was, because he's again outraced his teammate, outqualified his teammate. Did he get into Q2 yesterday? He did. Yes. So again, another Q2 appearance for Alex. You know, job done, well done. Move on to Hungary.
Yeah, absolutely. Moving on to Hungary. And speaking of people who have an affinity with Hungary, Owain, Valtteri Bottas, one of the three drivers to start on the hard tyres, the other two being Gasly and Sainz. With the exception of Sainz, I think ultimately where Bottas has finished has just kind of shown that starting on the hard tyre just wasn't the right decision. You know, he pitted on lap 37, which came 20 laps after the safety car, which, you know, just ruled everything out from that strategy.
Yeah, I'm not sure you can level blame at them though, to be honest with you. In some ways, I mean, I can't remember the allocation of tyres that they would have had at the start of the race, but I don't think it's a bad tactical decision to start on the hards. I think it would have actually been quite a good idea initially without that safety car having happened. Obviously, the safety car did happen. So obviously you don't want to come in and pit. You know, you want to gain track position at least. I think unfortunately that looking back on it, it's just like, well, that's just sometimes the cards just fall against you. And that's heads you into quite a difficult race. So I don't think there's anything that he could have done. I don't think that there's anything they could have done. I think this is just sort of a natural playing out of the strategy that they chose. And unfortunately, it's gone against them. I don't think that's not a bad drive by Bottas. It's just sometimes it goes against you.
Yeah, and another team whose strategy ended up going against them with the safety car, Mick Schumacher, the last of the finishers, pitted early, you know, for the hards, was quicker than most of the cars on track, but ultimately that safety car just neutralized the Haas. And Tom, you know, a disappointing weekend for Mick Schumacher and Haas in general.
Yeah. Like I said on the quali show yesterday, you know, Mick's qualifying result on paper is not a true reflection of his pace, because he put that car into the top 10 in Q1. And it's not like he did a big corner cut to get it. I know he did go four wheels off the track, but it was marginal. But yeah, it was still okay. It was still all four wheels. But he still would have comfortably been in Q2. I really can't talk today. I do apologize. I can't even blame the heat anymore. He would have easily been into Q2. Just unfortunate that his first lap was, you know, whatever happened, it happened in quali. So, you know, so his race day. Yeah, it was just unfortunate. You know, Haas committed early to the two stop, which, given Paul Ricciardo, it did look like it was going to be the way to go. Obviously, you always run the risk of a safety car or a VSC or a red flag or whatever, but we've never had that many here. I know we've only been here since 2018. Obviously, we didn't have a race in 2020, you know, because of COVID. But when the two Haas pit and then Leclerc, you know, bombed that, what, about 5-10 laps later? Yeah, Gunther Steiner must have just sunk when he was on the pit wall, thinking, "Oh God, this is just not what we need." It wasn't what they needed at all, and yeah, it didn't do Mick any favors. Unfortunately, you know, his point streak has come to an end. but it's the weekend is not a reflect is not a true reflection on his pace. And like I, again, like I said yesterday, he's got that fiery side, you know, like his dad obviously used to have when he raced, beginning to come out in his driving. You know, he stopped being so nice in the nicest way possible. I know that's a bit of a contradiction in terms, but he's got a bit of you wouldn't even call it aggression, but he's just got a again, not provide. I don't quite know what the right word is. Yeah, attitude. Thank you, Rubes. Yeah, that's the best words. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I like how that came straight to your mind. You know, it's his driving. We saw it when he was racing against Max in Silverstone, and then we saw it again in Hungary, and we saw it in Austria, but we saw it in Hungary last year, which is the only chance last year that he was genuinely going to be on for points. And then obviously the car last year was an absolute dog, so it didn't happen. But I said it last year. I said, we need to see more of that Mick Schumacher. And it's beginning to come out a bit more now. And it's what we need. You know, he always seems to sort of blossom in his second season of whatever he's done. If you look at his F2 season, you know, his first season, I didn't race him at all in his first season. I was one of those people saying anything and kidding anything and blah, blah, blah. But no, he absolutely came through in his second season. And then he's beginning to do that now in F1. So hopefully the second half of the second season has bring a couple more upgrades. He's on the right track, is Mick.
Yeah, it's always easy to think of the right words when you're not the one that's speaking them, Tom. So, you know, don't worry. I've got your back. but Aaron, Zhou Guanyu, P16, BNF ultimately, Ferrari power unit suspicions, just more unreliability letting down Guanyu here.
Yeah, it's just another DNF for Zhou, unfortunately. I mean, when the car is on song and it finishes the race, Zhou is actually able to put together some really good weekends. And we've seen that recently. He's driven really, really well. But the last two rounds, it's just not quite worked out for Alfa Romeo. They've not had the car to capitalize. And they've very quickly fallen away from that battle for P4. But they're comfortably ahead of Haas, and you know, they're still way above expectation in P6 in the championship, and Zhou is outperforming everybody's expectations. So yeah, it's just one of those things that's racing, unfortunately. So I believe he was still classified something like six laps down, but Ferrari need to get on top of this, because we've had Haas suffer reliability issues. And Tom, by the way, I thought your Günther Steiner impression was very, very mild. I'm sure there was some door smashing going on at the safety car.
There could have been, but I'm trying to keep it PG.
And then you got Alfa Romeo, who also have the Ferrari power unit, and they seem to be getting tripped up by it too, as do the main Ferrari team. So Ferrari have banked on performance for their power units rather than reliability. And it is catching them out. It's catching their customers out. If I was Alfa Romeo, I'd be asking for some sort of refund. I hope they've kept their receipts. So, yeah, I'd be knocking on Mattia Binotto's door and whoever's the head of the Ferrari engine department and saying, look, this isn't the product we paid for. It doesn't get to the end of the race.
Yeah, a glass cannon's all well and good until you start to factor in the fact it's made out of glass, in which case, you know, glass shatters. Owain, Nicholas Latifi tried to make an overtake, which is something that we don't often get to say, but then he had contact with K-Mag during the incident and ultimately led to both K-Mag and Latifi retiring. So is that a sign that Nicholas Latifi shouldn't be trying to make overtakes, or is it more, you know, sometimes you need to choose your overtakes a bit more wisely?
It's one of those things that there's some people that can find gaps and get through those gaps without having an issue, and there's some people who can't. And I would say that Nicholas Latifi is probably one of those people, unfortunately. I think it's just a product of people going racing, but I don't think Latifi has necessarily the skill, let alone the car, to be able to be overtaking, unfortunately. So I, you know, not to say that there was always going to end in tears, but you know, there's some drivers who are luckier than others. So in that respect, so yeah, you know, I mean, credit for trying, because I think too often we've criticised Latifi for not trying or you know, not necessarily going for moves that he could have done, or being a bit what's the word? I don't know. A bit of a pushover. So it's good to see me at least. You know, have another go. Don't hit, but don't run your opponent out of room, and you know, don't retire, because it's just causing issues and it's a DNF. But beyond that, you know, I think it's what it is.
Yeah, and he did at least get a chance to try out the new upgraded Williams this weekend, which, you know, after 2 weeks of not having the upgrades, it's a bit strange that it took so long to get around. But I guess, you know, in this era of budget cap, you want to make sure that if you're putting upgrades on both cars that they do work. And who's, let's face it, who's the more likely driver to bring the car home, as much as it didn't actually happen at Silverstone for Alex Albon in the upgraded car? But, you know, they weren't to know that. Tom, Kevin Magnussen had a pretty decent start to the race. He made up a lot of positions from last on the grid. And then ultimately it just all went downhill from the safety car and the Haas early stop.
Yeah, K-Mag was one of the sort of biggest sufferers from the safety car coming out when he did, because he was the very first car to pit, I believe, aside from Tsunoda, who obviously put on, you know, he was the first of the quote-unquote normal pit stops, or the sort of planned pit stops, if you like. I believe, anyway, please correct me if I'm wrong. I'm sure the internet will. Yeah, he was, you came in, swapped to Haas, like we said about Mick, committed very early to a two-stop strategy, was probably going to work out, but with their tyres have been burnt up quite a bit by the end, because it was, I think it was the hottest race we've had so far this year. You know, I think, you know, because it said track temperatures were pushing 50 degrees at one point. And, you know, the south of France, middle of July, I know it gets hot down there. So it would have been I wonder if they would have almost pitted too early. I wonder if they perhaps should have waited a couple of laps. But also, I don't have the data that they had, so I don't know. Maybe they're gambling on us. No, they couldn't have gambled on a safety car because it horrendously backfired. K-Mac, it was going well. And then, you know, he and Latifi had that coming together at turn two towards the end. There's no further action for either of them. I checked the FIA website. There's nothing more coming from it, but that sort of like that basically brought curtains to any further, you know, any further race that he was going to have. And I think he was a DNF in the end. Was he K-Mag?
Yeah, that's why we're talking about him at this point of the.
I honestly couldn't remember if he DNF'd or if he was just like at the back of the grid. Because I wasn't paying much attention to the back, to be honest. So, again, you know, disappointing for him, disappointing for Haas. But like I said about Mick, not a true reflection on their speed.
Yeah, absolutely. And Aaron, a driver who seemed to have the speed today, Charles Leclerc, had pulled ahead of Max Verstappen about 2 seconds, still in sort of undercut territory. And we do know that the undercut is powerful around Paul Ricard, but clearly Ferrari just banked on, you know, being able to out-strategize Red Bull. I'm not sure where they got that idea from, but ultimately, Charles Leclerc crashing out. He did hold his hands up and say that it was his own mistake, but there were suspicions around, you know, the throttle issue from Austria returning. Ultimately, just a devastating day for Charles Leclerc, particularly, you know, somewhat writing off his championship chances without something major happening.
You know, I don't think it matters whether it was a car fault or a driver error. The crux of it is that Charles Leclerc has crashed has failed to finish when leading the race for the third time this season. And if you take all of those three and you turn them just into second places, this championship looks drastically different. But the fact that remains that Charles Leclerc has been driving brilliantly all season. The pole position, that was phenomenal. Okay, he had a little bit of help from Carlos Sainz, but that's what you have to do. That was Ferrari nailing the strategy for once. And then he was in control. He managed that opening stint beautifully. Because I was convinced on the third lap when Verstappen got DRS, I thought it was all over. I absolutely thought it was all over. But he held firm. He was fast in all the right places to keep Verstappen behind and force Verstappen to go for the undercut. Verstappen would have probably gone for the undercut anyway had he stayed behind. Well, he did, obviously. But finding himself in second position, they would have always gone for it. But then to cut to the scene of him in the wall, it's another potential 25 points down the drain. And he said it was a mistake. I'm not so sure. I mean, Nico Rosberg was saying about the gust of wind, and if there's anyone who's an expert on a gust of wind costing you a win, it's Nico Rosberg. But it's just such a devastating blow. After Austria, where he was magnificent and he passed Verstappen three times and won the race, this was the worst possible backup to it. And the scream down the radio is the new version of Hamilton's "Oh no" in Malaysia. It's slightly haunting. It's as a neutral person looking at it, it's not very good for the championship, because you always want a competitive championship. You don't always get it, but the potential has been for a super competitive championship. But through a myriad of reasons, it seems that Leclerc's championship challenge, if it's not over now, it is severely hamstrung because of this. And it really shouldn't be. Really, really shouldn't be. It's such a shame that we're talking about it in this way, when it could be thrilling and engaging, but it looks like it's just going to run away from Ferrari and Leclerc at the moment.
Yeah, and in his interview with, I think it was Rachel Brooks in the paddock afterwards, he said, you know, lost 25 points here, lost 7 points in Imola because of his mistakes. And he said that if he loses the championship by 32 points, he knows, you know, where the fault lies. And that's, you know, following his, you know, it was my mistake. But ultimately, you know, like you say, Ferrari have let him down at points, reliability's let him down. And the occasional mistake has let him down. Owain, Yuki Tsunoda's race, you know, was just ended by Ocon effectively. He retired on lap 17 when the safety car came out, but I think it was the writing was on the wall. It was never going to recover from the start, was it?
No. You get punted off. You're at the back of the field, right? Like, it's not even a case of getting turned around and getting back on with it. You know, it's right at the start. From that point onwards, he was always going to be at least 10 seconds back on the rest of the field. The AlphaTauri is not fast enough to bring it through the field to any meaningful amount. I'm not saying give up immediately. I think, to be honest, that when they retired the car was probably the best time to save the engine and live to fight another day. It's annoying. I would like to see what Tsunoda would have done. But, you know, really, it didn't. There was nothing he could have done once he got hit. That was it for me. I thought that there's no more you can do. yes, Yuki Tsunoda. I think that would be fair. Like, that would be fair game as a pun. If he hadn't, like, if he'd done anything wrong, he didn't. He was just on the outside, and then someone just steered into him. And but it's not his fault. What could he do? Maybe leave a bit more space. But then again, I don't, it's not one of those things. It wasn't like a Ocon's, you know, lost a massive amount of downforce. But whatever. No, I, it's a sort of his day ended before it really began. Like I say, there's probably just a small benefit of them actually being able to retire the car only the third of the way through the race rather than running it to futility.
Yeah, absolutely. They might as well, you know, come in, get some new parts for the next time around, not put mileage on the engine, which the power units are certainly, their price tag will be adding up this season unless you have a Mercedes one, it seems, for the most part. But yeah, that is a look through the drivers' finishing positions. Now it's time to assign a star of the race. So I'm going to start with you, Tom. Who is your driver of the day?
Carlos Sainz.
I think that's a pretty definitive answer that's probably going to come from most of us. But yeah, Carlos Sainz is certainly a good shout. Aaron?
I fundamentally disagree with Carlos Sainz, not because I dislike him, because starting at the back in a fast car, you're always going to make progress. So it looks better than it really was. I can see why Carlos Sainz was voted driver of the day, because his pace was outstanding. But I'm actually going to give it to George Russell for his brilliant little bit of gamesmanship. Catching Sergio Perez off guard and then holding him off as well in the closing laps. So that was really super impressive. But, you know, Carlos Sainz did do a really good job. And if he'd started at the front, he'd have probably won the race. He had the pace to do it, but he didn't. So I can't give him it.
Yeah, the other two Mercedes are also good shouts for this. So good idea to, you know, assign it to George Russell as well. Owain, who are you going for? One or the two? One or the three? Someone else entirely?
I was going to go for Lewis Hamilton because I was just, you know, the ability to hold off Perez. That's what I was.
That was eye roll.
I didn't see it. No,
what eye roll.
I was just like, I'm sorry, but if you're 18k slower when you've both got DRS and you know you managed to defend your way from the you know from the fastest car on track, you know from the race, you know the teammate of the guy who's won the race. Like I said before, I thought Perez would blow by Hamilton. He didn't. So I think Hamilton did a great job in a car that probably wasn't the best, and you know he's got a second place. Like he's inching closer. You know, but I still think Hamilton getting a win this season is on, and I think it's sort of a natural forward step.
So we got one vote for Sainz, one vote for Russell, one vote for Hamilton. No one's going to say Max Verstappen really, because you know. Ultimately, started P2, P1 didn't finish. So, you know, inherits P1 and just then has to finish the race. I'm going to go diplomatic and say that you're all right. You know, I'm going to sit on the fence.
If I can just say on Owen's point about Hamilton winning a race this season, the next race is Hungary, and that's one of his most successful circuits. So, yeah, I don't know how well the Mercedes will fare there. It'll probably start jumping up and down again, knowing my predictions this year. But he could be a strong bet for at least a podium again in Hungary.
Yeah, and just a note, we are previewing the Hungarian Grand Prix tomorrow live on YouTube. So if you're watching now, make sure you're watching tomorrow night as well. And if you're watching this or listening to this after that episode, make sure you also check that out, you know. Some good people on the show. But yeah, so that's our drivers of the day. Now it's time to give our panelists some opportunity to give a bit of self-promotion. So let's start off with Tom. Everything F1. Go ahead.
Cheers, Rubes. Yeah, so I'm part of Everything F1. We cover any race car that's got four wheels really. So F1, F2, F3, W Series, IndyCar, Formula E. Those are our main ones at the moment. We have a plethora of social media accounts. So all your favorite platforms, you know, so what have we got? Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter. I think those are the big four. The handle for that is at Join the F1. We have a website, everythingf1.com, our YouTube channel. We search Everything F1, you'll find us. And finally, our podcast, which we do weekly. Excuse me, I've got hiccups. So you can find that on all your favorite podcasting platforms. We do race reviews, previews, all that good stuff. And sometimes we have some rather snazzy guests on as well.
Always love a nice snazzy guest. Aaron, you're from the Five Red Lights podcast. Take it away.
I'm the host of the Five Red Lights podcast. We do race recaps with a Grand Prix cap. I do Driver of the Month videos. The Flying Lap, where I try and beat the pole position lap time and tell you everything that happened in the race. I also write for F1 Chronicle, so go and check out the race report, which is already up and posted. That was ready before we sat down to record this show. And I also write for Inside F2. So you can find me in lots of places on Twitter, on Instagram, at 5_red_lights or at AaronHarper41. And you can find me on Instagram, which is 5redlights.
Yeah. And Owain, you're generally like me, mostly found on here. But if there's anything you want to chuck in this segment, go ahead.
I can't keep parroting the whole, if you'd like to go and read meme articles, go and get those on sportlightpro.com. I very rarely write anymore, unfortunately. But if I do, it will be on the F1 Chronicle website. That's where it will be.
Yeah, check out the F1 Chronicle website, as I'm sure you have if you are watching this podcast or listening to this podcast or, you know, reading any of Aaron's race roundups and stuff like that. But me, I'm, like I say, mostly on here, but you can find me on the socials at Rubes, R-U-U-B-E-Z. Put a 001 on the end if you're on Instagram. And with that, Grid Talk is available on YouTube, where most episodes are recorded live, as you will know if you're currently watching the live stream. Stick around because we'll be having a bit more of a discussion, answering some questions that have been left in the comments just for a little bit, just to, you know, give something back. But we're also available on Amazon Fire, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Music, Verbal, Omni Studio, and Pocket Casts. Just search Formula One Grid Talk for our back catalogue of shows with previews and reactions to qualifying and the race results. Please consider supporting the channel on Patreon so we can get mics, lights, and better recording equipment. You can get your hands on some official Grid Talk merchandise on f1chronicle.com/store. And don't forget, if you do leave a review, you will automatically be entered into a chance to win some of our champion range of merch. Also, make sure you subscribe so you're the first to know when each new episode is released weekly. We'll also be back soon tomorrow, with plenty more F1 content. So thank you very much to everyone for listening, and thank you very much to everyone for joining me, and goodbye.